Accession number 28685, Mr. George Mail, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Mail?
Yes, I was born on the 26th of August, 1919, at 25 Hawthorne Grove, Pennycross, Plymouth.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yes, my father had been a Navy man, but when I was born, he worked in Devonport Dockyard. He was a boilermaker's assistant.
And was he in steady employment?
Yes.
And could you tell us a bit about your family life?
Yes, my mother was a farmer's daughter from Biddeford in North Devon, and she was my father's second wife. His first wife, my father and his first wife, he was then a canteen manager in the Navy, and they liked to whoop it up. They'd gone out for a meal one night and had 6 oysters each. She didn't like hers. She only ate one and a bit. My father ate his 6 and what she'd left. They both went down with typhoid as a result, and she was 3 months pregnant at the time, and she died. And that was how my mother came to look after the 3 children of my father's first marriage. They eventually went to live with other relatives. My mother then had 2 girls and 2 boys before me. That would have been before 1914. My father was then in the Navy and he was away until 1919 when I came home and was born, when he came home and I was born. After me, there was another girl and a boy, so there were 7 in my family altogether. But we were almost 2 separate families because the first 4 were that much older than we were. There was just myself and my young brother and sister, generally.
Now, was it a comfortable upbringing in Plymouth? I mean, what was it like? I mean, how comfortably off were you?
Oh, we were poor. My father at that time was on £2.05 a week. To keep wife and 7 children. He was a very hard worker, apart from the working in the dockyard on the ships. He was a great gardener. He got an allotment and grew nearly all the food that we wanted in the way of vegetables and so on. He would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go up on the allotment for a couple of hours, come back, clean up, and then walk about 3 miles to the dockyard and be in there by 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 in the evening. When he came home, he'd have his tea and then he'd go up on the allotment again. If the weather was bad, he'd do some decorating. He got some funny ideas. If you gave him a pot of paint, he'd put it everywhere, and especially if it was gold paint. He loved to... We had a clock with a pendulum, a small one that stood on a mantelpiece, and he loved to repaint this clock gold.
Now, what about your education?
I went to Montpellier Junior School in Plymouth until I was 11, well, 10 and a bit, really. I took the 11 plus exam, and to the surprise of my teacher, I passed, and my surprise. So I went from there. I was the only one in my family who went on to better education. The others all went to ordinary schools and left at 14 and went to work. I went to Tamar Central School until I was 16 and a half. And as I say, I was sent from the employment exchange. They sent me to a shop called Costas.
No, hang on. How did you do at school? I mean, what subjects did you like? What were you good at?
I wasn't good at maths. I was good at English, history and geography and art.
What didn't you like?
What didn't I like? I got on fairly well at school. 12 months after I went to Tamworth Central, we got a new headmaster, Tom Wilcox, who was a strange character. He was very fiery. He'd got red hair that stood up on his head about an inch all round. And he was an eminent scientist. How he came to be head of my school, I don't know. He was a fellow of the Royal Society. When we had school speech days, he got some brilliant people to come as guest speakers. So I liked my headmaster, and I got on pretty well with the teachers as well, although I had occasions when I did get the cane.
Now, what about sport? Were you interested in sport?
Yes, I played rugby and swimming. We never had much in the way of cricket. We had no proper playing fields. We had to go to a public park to play rugby, and a public swimming pool about 2 miles away. You could only go to the pool for swimming if you were a learner. And I was a learner for each of my years at the school. Although I could swim quite well, and I did get a penknife as a present at one stage, which comes up a bit later in my story.
Did you have any big hobbies outside of school, you know, the Boy Scouts or anything?
I did join the Scouts briefly, but I think I left because my parents couldn't afford the uniform.
Any other hobbies?
Yes, I was very much into cooperative movement. When I was 15, I won a scholarship. I was the top boy in Plymouth in cooperative
education. Now, tell me a bit about that, because the cooperative movement's not as big now. Tell us about the cooperative movement. Why were you so interested?
It was where I lived at Hawthorne Grove, although it's called Hawthorne Grove, there were no trees in it. And there were no trees in the three streets, the one either side. It was referred to as the village. To the south of us was the Co-op Bakery, built in 1905, a massive building with a huge stack on which the letters PCS 1905. And to the north of us was the Cooperative Laundry. There must have been several hundred girls who worked in the laundry. This was a big industry in those days. And most of them wore clogs. I can remember them coming out at lunchtime and clattering along the roads. And then above the laundry was the Cooperative Jam Factory, which again was a big thing. The Cooperative Society in Plymouth was massive. It had been formed in 1860. And apart from shops in all the areas, it had got wonderful central buildings, and it owned five farms. The milk came from the farms and was delivered, and they'd got vans that kept 200 vans that delivered bread, and there were big vans that came around with vegetables and fruit. So the co-op was rather important, and also the fact that in those days, people got dividend, 2 and 6 months in the pound at one stage. My mother relied on the quarterly dividend to get us new shoes and clothes.
Now, how did the dividend work? 'Cause people don't know now.
Well, if you went to the shops, you got stamps, which you stuck on to. They supplied adhesive A4 size. And you had to lick the backs of the stamps and stick them onto the And then every quarter, before the quarterly share out, there would be a week when you could take all the cards to the store, and they would be checked and marked off in blue so that they couldn't be used again. And you're credited with the number of pounds that had come from there. The delivery, the milk, they issued stamps. Whatever you bought from the co-op, you got stamps for. And that's how it worked.
Now, why was this so interesting to you? Because if you see what I mean, I can see why it was a good thing. But why did it interest you, you know?
Well, I suppose my interest started. I had an Uncle George who was a gold miner, and he came and stayed with us when I was 9 months old. I was a poor little thing, and my mother had to take me to hospital every day, and it was 4 miles away. She had to take me to hospital every day. I'd got nevuses on the back of my leg, and I'd had to be operated on. When I was 9 months old, our milkman, Tommy Adamson, had been a drinking pal with Uncle George. When Uncle George was staying with us when I was a baby, he was home from foreign parts. And Uncle George said to Tommy Adamson, "You must give that boy a cup of milk every morning, and until I started school at 5, I would take my cup out to Tommy Adamson's cart and fill up my cup, and I'd have a cup of milk." I think that helped to nourish me quite a bit.
You were talking about how you got interested in the cooperative yourself, as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, well, as children, the co-op used to run classes in cooperative education. And we used to play in the streets in those days, of course. And it was somewhere to go once a week to the co-op classes. So I started going to these classes. And you got they had an exam every spring. And you got half a crown, which had to be a book prize, or 5 shillings if you did very well. And as I say, when I was 15, I got the top marks for Plymouth and was given a summer school at Shawnell's at Woolwich. I'd never been to London before. My parents, the school ran a trip 1 year to Windsor, and my parents couldn't afford for me to go. But when I went on this trip to Shawnell's, I'd got a copy of the paper that the children had been given describing the route. So I stood in the corridor of the train all the way from Plymouth to Windsor with this paper in my hand, and I thoroughly enjoyed the trip. I won 3 cooperative scholarships in successive years. The second year I went to Bexhill. They took over private schools in August for a week for these. It was supposed to be furthering your education, but it was really holiday. Each place had got a swimming pool. It was wonderful. So I went to Bexhill the second time, and the third year I went to Rhos-on-Sea, Colwyn Bay, North Wales. So the benefit of the co-op, I saw a bit of England before the war.
Were you part of the political side? Because you know that the co-op society...
Yes.
The Labour Party was in there. I mean,
yes.
Were you in that as well?
I was. At 14, we had... what we called the Comrade Circle. We were part of the British Federation of Cooperative Youth. We'd got 3 circles in Plymouth. I joined the Devonport one at 14 and met my future wife there. Her family were very much into the cooperative movement and the Labour Party.
So what sort of political activities did you engage in?
Well, there was the first Labour mayor for Plymouth, they weren't Lord Mayor then, was Jimmy Moses. He was a dockyardsman, a fitter in the dockyard, and he was also a Methodist preacher, and I'd gone to the Methodist church. So I knew Jimmy Moses. When he became candidate for the Devonport division of the national government, all we children would turn out, and so in those days the big thing with the elections was street parties, and we'd all go up and down the streets and shout out, vote, vote, vote for Jimmy Moses. He's the man who's going to win. So we'll help him all we can, for Jimmy is the man. And we'll vote, vote, vote to get him in. So that was my first political side. When I was 18, I became the first secretary of the Plymouth branch of the Cooperative Party. That didn't last very long because, you know, a year or two later I was in the Navy. So I was involved in politics, in the Labour Party, and in the cooperative movement very much. I was on the national executive of the British Federation of Cooperative Youth for 2 years before the war, which meant that I travelled to the cooperative union headquarters in Manchester for meetings, and went to our annual congress, which would be held in different parts of the country.
Now, so what were you going to do when you left school? I mean, you left school, what age were you when you left school?
16 and a bit, 16 and a half.
Have you got any qualifications? Sorry.
No.
So this would be what, that's
1936.
Just early 36.
Yeah, March 36. And I was sent by the employment office. They sent me to a shop in Plymouth called Costa's, a big department store.
Now, what were you doing there? What was your job?
I did not. I was interviewed for the job of apprentice in the flooring department. I was a big lad. I was a rugby player and a swimmer. And they wanted me for humping around big rolls of lino and selling that. And my wages would have been 5 shillings a week. So I told them in no... No way was I going to go for that. I went back to the education office and tore them off a strip. I said, if you can't offer me anything better than that, don't bother. Well, a couple of weeks later, I got a letter from them to go to the Medical Officer of Health's office in Plymouth to start as a junior clerk there at £1 a week. My mother was overjoyed because none of her other children had a start in life like that. Oh, George has got a job in the council, and it'll be a job for life, and he's got a pension at the end.
So you were in the office of the Medical Office of Health, Plymouth.
Yes.
Plymouth Council.
Only for 3 months.
And what were you doing there as a clerk?
Well, my first job was to operate the telephone exchange. In those days, we'd got 4 outside lines, and they call it PBX, don't they? I had to sit at this console and lift leads and put. If somebody wanted to make a phone call from one of the offices, a little eye would come down, and you'd have to take a plug and put it in, and then you could speak to the person. They'd tell you what number they wanted. You'd got a circular dial on which you could dial the number up. Even the Medical Officer of Health had to come through on these 4 lines through the box. I got the job there.
Was that your main duties then, switchboard?
Yes.
And did you enjoy it?
I did other work. Yeah, because I got a window overlooking a little park and I could see the girls from the co-op laundry. They used to come out and sit in the park. I got that job because my predecessor had a habit of listening in on the conversations between the medical officer of health and who he was talking to. And the medical officer of health was friendly with the chief constable. And one afternoon, the chief constable and the medical officer of health were telling a few risky stories, and this lad had got the line opened. He was listening in on them and laughed out loud. And the medical officer of health guessed what was happening and they got the sack. So that was how I got that job.
Have you just done the switchboard? Or
no, I used to do the post. I'd got a ledger, and whatever letters from various offices were going to be sent, they came into my office, and I had to put the stamps on and enter up in the ledger where the letters were going. There was two sisters, two elderly ladies. One was called Olive May, and she took me under her wing and got me interested in learning Pitman's shorthand. She gave me a shorthand manual, and I used to learn Pitman's shorthand. So that's how I spent that 3 months. After 3 months, I was transferred to the city hospital. So that would have been about August 1936. And I did various jobs there. In the mornings...
What was your job title there?
Clerk. In the mornings, I worked in the main stores. There were four men employed in the stores and a chief store man. From what I remember, my main job there was doing the football pools. We used to do Littlewood's football pools, and I had to collect sixpence from each of the staff and work out these forms and arrange to send them off. And then I had a little desk in the corner of this big main store where I had to do various things with the dockets of things that had been ordered. It was a big hospital, and the Ernie Metherell was the man in charge of the stores. He was an ex-chief in the Navy, a pipe smoker, and his pipe always seemed to have a liquid in the... You could hear him bubbling as he was smoking his pipe.
So how did your jobs develop? This is a city hospital.
That was my morning job. In the afternoons, I was sent to the medical superintendent's office, his outer office, and I became hospital records. The patient's records hadn't been done for 3 years. In this room where I was with the medical officer's secretary, who was a man, John Rowe, I had to stand up at a very high desk. I had got a stool that I could prop on, but I stood up at this desk, and around the room there were piles of manila folders on the floor. One pile headed with a sheet of paper on it, January 34, February 34, and so on. And I had to start and enter these, open the folders up individually, enter up in huge ledgers. It must have been 18 inches to 2 foot, I should think. I had to enter up the patient's official number to start with, and then the name and address and the GP's name, date of admission, date of discharge, diagnosis on admission, diagnosis on discharge. And then each of them had to be, I'd got racks to put these files on. And in 9 months of afternoons, I got this up to date. All 3 years, I'd got them. So after that, it was a doddle. I'd got interested in the various illnesses that I'd come across. So I learned a bit that way. I'd got a nurse's dictionary, so the obscure words I became familiar with. And when I was in the stores, I'd got two big catalogues from suppliers of hospital instruments and so forth. So I got a bit of, I acquired some knowledge of what went on in hospitals. And I used to go around the wards and take path reports and x-ray plates and things to the different wards. And when I was there, I'd nose around to see what was. And there was one man called Jimmy Morecambe, a patient who'd been there for 10 years, and he was paralysed, he was lying in bed, and he'd been flat on his back. He couldn't move, and his eyes had turned to look down because he'd been in bed so long. And I used to sit beside Jimmy Morecambe and talk to him, and the only thing I could do for him was to give him a cigarette. I'd have to take a cigarette out of the packet and put it in his mouth for him and take it out from time to time until it was finished. So that was a little job I did in Male Ward 3. I mentioned in 1938, in April 38, it was decided that there was probably a war coming, so a coach in Plymouth was converted into a mobile, into an ambulance. The seats were taken out and racks were put in where stretchers could be put, and this was brought to the hospital for demonstration to the press. Half a dozen of us were put on stretchers and laid in this coach. And then the coach took us on a tour of Plymouth and back to the hospital. And then it was decided, the hospital had been built on grounds that had been a workhouse. And there were several big workhouse buildings that were empty. One of these buildings, I was now 18, 19. I was put in charge of ordering all the equipment that would be needed to set up 6 emergency hospitals. I had to, with the medical superintendent, I had to order all the surgical instruments, all the anaesthetic equipment, the beds, the bedding, and everything that would be required to set up 6 emergency hospitals. Now, between April and the start of the war, we got this all organised. And then, when the day war was declared, on that morning, when Chamberlain made his speech, I was
now,
in...
Now, what do you remember of that day? Tell us as much as you remember about that day as possible. I have to know.
Well, it was Sunday morning. We lived in a council house in Plymouth. We got a nice back garden. And at the top of the garden, we were putting in an air raid shelter. My father was no longer with the family at that stage, and I had dug the hole to put this air raid shelter in, an Anderson shelter. It was corrugated iron, I'd sunk it 3 feet down into the ground, and I was just finishing it off. I was heaping earth over the air raid shelter when 11 o'clock in the morning, Chamberlain spoke and said that we were at war with Germany. Well, I had my lunch, and then I guessed that the air raids would happen and casualties would be coming into the hospital. So I got on my bike and went up to the hospital. expecting, before I went into the hospital, the recruiting office was just outside. I went into the recruiting office and volunteered for the army. I wanted to go into the RAMC. They weren't interested in me. They were busy calling up territorials and reservists. So that didn't happen.
So they just didn't take any notice of you?
No. The next